Let's start with the Blazers. You do the podcast with Joe Freeman. I thought your opening was kind of perfect because there was the freak collision that cost them Nurkic with a broken wrist. Then CJ McCollum diagnosed with a cracked foot out about a month. But just the timeline seemed odd. You know, he got hurt Saturday against the Hawks. Then we really didn't even find out what exactly was wrong for like 3 days, right?
Well, they said after the game that the MRI had revealed just a sprain, and that was on Saturday. And then Sunday, Stott said the same thing, just a sprain, not sure how long he's going to be out. And then on Monday, after the loss to the Spurs, Lillard said that based on his conversations with CJ and how upbeat he was, that he didn't feel like CJ felt like it was going to be that long. And so he kind of hoped they would get CJ back at the end of the homestand, which would have meant, you know, 4 games off. But then that night, it was revealed that he had an actual hairline fracture, which he said on Tuesday when we talked to him, that someone noticed on the MRI this small little line that other doctors had not seen. And so they went back and did more tests and did x-rays and CT scans and all those kind of fancy doctor things, and nothing would show it except for the MRI, and it was very, very faint. And so they decided that, yes, he does have a hairline fracture, and so he's going to be in a boot. He does not need surgery, but they're going to have to reevaluate in 3 to 4 weeks. So he's going to be out probably at least 4 weeks, and then they'll go from there. But, yeah, it was weird. They went from sprain a few games out probably to, oh, fracture, he's out for several weeks.
Unbelievable. And, of course, now we know Nurk is done till mid-March, at least the end of February for McCollum. So you lean on Cantor, then you get Trent and Simons in the backcourt. I mean, I know it just happened, but is there any kind of feel for, are they going to try and squeeze in a vet under the salary cap or just wait it out? I mean, what are their options?
Yeah, you know, I don't see them making a move. I mean, some people have wondered, should they go out and, you know, check the free agent wire, see who's out on the street and available just to have a veteran in. Then they could get someone like Shabazz Napier, who played for the team before. But, you know, they still have 4 guards because they're playing Rodney Hood at guard. So he actually started against San Antonio and had his best game of the season, which is huge for them because he seemed to turn the corner, hopefully. God, he was miserable. Like the previous 5 or 6 games, he was like 3 for 22 from the field or something like that.
Right.
And then he goes 9 for 14 against the Spurs. But so if you're starting Dame and CJ and you still have Trent and you still have Simons, you got 4 guards. I mean, you can always play Jones. He's 6'6". He's not 6'8". He can play the 2 guard, especially he does sometimes on defense anyway. And you got Melo can play the 3. And you have, Hood can play the 3, Trent can play the 3, Miller can play the 4, Covington can play the 4. You know, so, like, I don't think they have to go out and get someone else just to get someone else. You know, now if something popped loose where there was a player they could trade for and it works out well, I mean, I could see them maybe doing that. But, you know, it's so early for anyone to really be considering dumping guys that I just don't think that's going to be a thing. So I think they're just going to ride it out as best they can. This is one of the reasons why they tried to get a lot of depth. Is 1 because of COVID and 2 because of injuries. And so here they are. They're tapping into that depth big time.
You know, it's amazing because we've seen bad things happen to teams, whether it's the ball going through Buckner's legs or Ernest Biner fumbling on his way to the end zone or Greg Norman in a major golf tournament. But, man, from Walton to Sam Bowie to Brandon Roy to Greg Oden, now Nurkic twice, does any franchise you could think of in the sports we follow just get killed by injuries more than these guys?
Yeah, it's funny. It's not funny, but it's just, yeah, it's funny. So some of the fans keep saying things like, we can never have nice things, and we should never even ever have a center. Why ever have a center from, you know, Walton to Bowie to Oden to this? You know, it's like, why even bother? No, it's, you know, Damian even said it himself, a letter. He said after the Nurkic injury, is like, it's always something. You know, something always seems to happen. And, you know, last year they didn't have Nurkic to start because of his broken leg. Then, Zach Collins, I almost forgot his name, he doesn't play so long. Zach Collins hurts his shoulder. And then he comes back in the bubble, hurts his ankle, supposed to come back right about now, and he can't because he had another surgery on the same ankle. So he's out for a few more months. Hood last year, blew out his Achilles. miss the rest of the year. Like, it's wild what they've been going through. But, of course, still, all I keep seeing is stocks must go. So I tells you where the fans' heads are. As a matter of fact, somebody the other day was like saying how we have enough talent. We should still be good. We shouldn't have lost like that to the Pacers without Nurkic and then to the Spurs. I'm like, they played one game without both of them. You want to fire Stocks because of that? Like, come on, that's the second and third best player. Well, still, we're good enough. We shouldn't go, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, my God, whatever. So it's not a happy time right now in Blazerland.
No, Twitter, social media, in the comment section where reason gets flushed down the toilet. Talking with Aaron Fentress of the Oregonian, you posted something on Twitter yesterday, cracked me up. So the account is at Chiefs Highlights, and it's Dominique Foxworth, who, by the way, is an absolutely brilliant guy. I mean, he retired, got his MBA at Harvard, writes for The Undefeated. And so the question was, if you could pick one quarterback ever, not just now, who you go with? And he picks Patrick Mahomes. Is that the ultimate case of what I refer to? Some folks just get wrapped up in the now bubble.
Yeah, it was, if you needed to win one game, you know, one game, who's your pick for quarterback of all time? You got every quarterback ever. You got one game, and he picked Mahomes. Now, Mahomes is clearly on the trajectory to the Hall of Fame, to be maybe an all-time great. He's had a 50-touchdown season. He's already won a Super Bowl. He's won a league MVP. Like, he's clearly done some amazing things. But, my God, if you think about it, he's won, like, three big games, right? He's won the Super Bowl. He won the AFC Championship to get to that Super Bowl. And I'll give him a playoff win. Because they came back against Houston down 21-0.
Yeah, big
one. Yeah, he did that. Okay, that's like in three. And then he won a playoff game the year before, so we'll give him that four. And then he lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. So he's won four big games in his life, dude. Joe Montana has four Super Bowls. Terry Bradshaw has four Super Bowls. Tom Brady has six Super Bowls, you know? It's like, really? That's your pick? So I just thought it was just kind of interesting because it's like, yeah, I'm going to go with the guy who has a longer track record of winning big games. If, you know, I have one game I absolutely have to win. I don't know what the stakes are. They didn't say the stakes were. They just said you have one game to win. So it's not a bad pick. It's just a bizarre pick because there's just so many more proven big game quarterbacks. Elway, Manning in the history, Breeze in the history of the NFL, Rodgers, going on. Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, heck, Fran Tarkin, who never won a Super Bowl, he still has won more big games.
Kelly. Jim Kelly.
Jim Kelly, there you go. So, yeah,
no, it's beautiful. I love these people. So, we all saw Josh Allen play against the Ducks. It was Tag's only year here, and he struggled big time. And he also struggled when they played Nebraska and Iowa. And I'll be the first to admit, I was like, man, guys who aren't accurate in college don't get accurate in the pros. For the 283,000th time, I was wrong. what do you remember about your read with this guy coming in and how he's wound up playing?
Well, I kind of defended it because he had a much better year his junior year than his senior year. And he lost a ton of good receivers going into that last year. And they just weren't very good. I remember in that Oregon game, he either didn't have time or there weren't very many guys open. He did kind of force some things. So it's one of those things where do you just want to overbang on a guy because of a bad day? Or are you just going to look at the raw ability and talent and then see if you can project and if you can, you know, what's going to be like after you coach it up. And I think what you have is a big, strong, athletic kid who had a cannon, right? So it's like from a sheer prospect standpoint, you know, it's almost like likening to the, you know, the baseball prospect who's a big, strong guy who's got, you know, a hell of a bat, he can hell of power, he can crush it. But you know, he struggles with the slider. So you kind of say to yourself, well, if we can fix him against the slider, right, he's going to be an all-star. If we can't, he's going to hit 35 home runs and strike out 245 times, right?
Right.
So, you know, and there's a lot of guys like that, and they fix it. They end up being able to hit the slider to the opposite field or whatever, and they maintain their batting average. They don't strike out a lot and become all-stars. So I liken it to that. Like, they were able to get him into the NFL, fix the mechanical things. Obviously, he's playing with better talent. Like, it's the same thing with Herbert. Like, you know, people are freaking out about, I mean, you guys talked about this. People are like, oh my God, Herbert, look what he's doing. Oregon could have done this. Well, one, if you want Herbert to contend for Heisman and throw 45 touchdowns, you shouldn't have fired Helfrich. That's one. Number, I'm always going to bring that up once a year, just so you know.
No way.
Number two, he has better receivers. Well, Josh Allen has better receivers than he had at Wyoming. I mean, I don't think he has one receiver from Wyoming in the NFL, where now he has two guys who are both all pro, right? So that changes the dynamic of who you're throwing to, how they're getting open. Same thing with Herbert. And plus, you get better. That's the whole point. You're supposed to go and you're full-time quarterback now. You don't have to worry about class. You don't have to worry about anything but working on your craft. So I do think it's a great story. I think it shows that what you are in college isn't necessarily what you're going to be in the NFL. And we've seen it the other way around. We've seen the perfect, you know, college quarterback. He's perfect. And then he gets in the NFL and he falls to pieces, right? So, yeah, it's always fascinating to see how quarterbacks develop.
No, I think it's a great story because if you watch him and Diggs together, they're like two kids who got together and became best friends, and they're having the time of their life. It's awesome.
I want them to win. Like, I've been trying to think of who I care about in the playoffs, and I would say that of the four teams, I hate the Packers. Tom Brady's got enough rings. Mahomes just got his ring. Reed got his ring. Buffalo's never won a Super Bowl, right? And I think if you're just a football fan, even if you weren't a Buffalo fan, you have to feel bad for, I mean, if you were watching it when it was unfolding, when they lost four times in a row, that's just horrible. So I really hope the Bills win it.
And not only that, but they had the Giants beat if they kick a field goal. Then it got progressively worse. It kept getting farther and farther away. So lastly, I just want to talk about Larry Scott, who's now coming to the end of his commissionership, is coming to a close. And when he took over in 2009 for Tom Hansen, who I think had fallen completely out of touch with the modern day game, and he did some great early work, but then all of a sudden the officiating never got better. They spent too much money. He came off as arrogant. He failed to expand the Pac-12 network, which I love. So just, it's been 12 years. What are your thoughts on his departure?
You know, I'm going to liken it to you hire, or let's say you get married and you give your wife permission to remodel the house. This is going to be a horrible analogy. I've been noticing in my old age I make these crazy analogies, just like I swore I would never do, like my dad did. But anyway, you give her carte blanche to remodel the house, and she spends a lot of money on it, and it does look better than what you had before. There's no doubt about it. But you're like, did you really have to spend $25,000 on an aquarium? You know, did you really? I mean, did we need an 8-car garage? We only got two. You know, did you have to put solar panels on the roof when we're not actually facing properly facing the sun? You know, it's like there's always bells and whistles. There's a bunch of fluff and bells and whistles and things you just didn't need that were a waste of money, sort of like having downtown offices in San Francisco, like one of the most expensive places on the planet to actually rent property. You know, I mean, that's just a waste of money. But he did it because it made him look big time and made it seem sexy, et cetera, et cetera. He did get the Pac-12 network rolling, but access for a lot of fans was not good enough. It still isn't good enough. And it just has never really reached where you wanted it to reach. They haven't generated the type of revenue they hoped they were going to generate. So I do think there were some good things that were done. It just never quite hit the mark like you would have hoped it would have. And then there weren't the follow-up adjustments to make up for that and make it better. And so it's just been sort of treading water and not growing. So I'll give him credit for some improvements, but he hasn't done enough, I think, to warrant continuing on in this job. And there's been a lot of waste and excess and misses along the way.
So what you're saying is property values in Walnut Creek don't compare to that in downtown San Francisco.
I'll never forget when that came out. Like, it was like you're looking at like the rent that the SEC and ACC while paying for their businesses, and they're looking at what the Pac-12 was paying, and it's like, are you kidding me? How arrogant are you to waste that kind of money on just offices? And I've been to the offices. They're beautiful. I was there for Pac-12 basketball media days. But you know what? This is the heart of San Francisco. It's hard to get to.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, I'm going to use that analogy for the remodel, and especially if my wife gets any ideas. But anyway.
Dude, my dad would tell these stories. And at some point, I was looking at me like, what are you talking about? And it would take him forever, and then he'd finally get to the point. He'd be like, okay. So I swore I'd never be like that, but I'm absolutely 100% that guy. Well, so I got it from him.
Well, you're the offshoot of the commercial of you can't, where the guy who tries to prevent you from becoming your parents when you become a homeowner.
Exactly. 100%.
All right, 100%. Folks. He's Aaron Fentress, homeowner at Aaron J. Fentress on Twitter. Enjoy all the action this weekend, my friend, and we'll catch up next week.
All right. Take care. Bye.
All right.